half of the country, if not more right now, is very much caught up on reacting to a construct of Donald Trump created by the media. And it's not to say that there are not measured, you know, arguments you can make against Trump and his policies. It's not to say you have to like Donald Trump. It's not to say you have to vote for Donald Trump, or, you know, you can hate him. And there are people that can lay out why they hate him in an articulate way. But the idea that things like, how did you miss, or, you know, you had one job, these phrases were trending on X when it happened. And I guess I just sort of thought about, if we had social media and X and everything during the Reagan attempt, or, you know, during JFK, or even Abraham Lincoln going all the way back, it's like, I don't think it would receive that type of response. Every other facet of the content they feed us and the things they put on TV is meant to divide us. I mean, but in this one area, they're just trying to make us more loving. I don't buy it. No one should buy it. And if we can't agree that kids need to be protected, I mean, that's a really dark moment. But the hope that I have, like you said, how people are so unaware of it, part of it is that we're so separated by algorithms. I mean, it's scary. And that's only one part of it. Like, sometimes I catch glimpses of network television, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News as well, you know, and my mouth just drops. I'm like, oh, they're telling people the end of democracy is near. They're telling people, it's crazy the way television is here. And then people log on their phones to fact check the television, because I think even a lot of leftists are past the point of like, the TV tells the truth. But now they're on to like, my friends on social media tell the truth. And we know those out, we are all so segregated ideologically by algorithm, that it's just this loop of like, you genuinely would never see it, that these books are in schools if it's not, you know, intended for your algorithm to see. And that's half the country and half the world. So it's important also to, sounds really basic and we're just so far past it, but listen to the other side, you know. I see problems, you know, arise on the left that people talk about, and I try really hard not to just immediately dismiss it, because I'm not seeing it talked about by people that I know and trust. And that's part of just seeing people I disagree with as human, but that's a waning quality.
Got to get your take on the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. This event's been a catalyzing moment for a lot of people all over the world, not just in America. What do you think this will do for his chances of becoming president? And what is your opinion on the reaction within the media to all of this?
Obviously, as an American myself, super horrified, saddened, trepidatious about the remainder of the election. You know, we still have some months to go, and these sort of things, unfortunately, are rarely just isolated incidents. They're things that build on themselves, and in this country we do have a history of this, but it's not something that I think has ever received the type of reaction, the type of dismissal, and the type of, frankly, ridicule that this one has. And I posted a video yesterday about this, just my overall thoughts. And one thing I mentioned was that half of the country, if not more right now, is very much caught up on reacting to a construct of Donald Trump created by the media. And it's not to say that there are not measured, you know, arguments you can make against Trump and his policies. It's not to say you have to like Donald Trump. It's not to say you have to vote for Donald Trump, or, you know, you can hate him. And there are people that can lay out why they hate him in an articulate way. But the idea that things like, how did you miss, or, you know, you had one job, these phrases were trending on X when it happened. And I guess I just sort of thought about, if we had social media and X and everything during the Reagan attempt, or, you know, during JFK, or even Abraham Lincoln going all the way back, it's like, I don't think it would receive that type of response. You know, I think back to 9/11. I was in third grade when it happened. Obviously, very traumatizing event for all Americans. And I think there's something to be said about how it altered brain chemistry for people that were growing up at that time. I mean, to have that happen during your fundamental years is... But I remember the unification immediately after. I remember how it seemed like everyone was on the same page, and I felt that even as a child. And I just can't say I see that in this situation. And all I hope for is a complete de-escalation of violence, no more. It doesn't have any place. I would never wish this or want this or ridicule this if it were to happen to, God forbid, Biden, knock on wood, God forbid anyone. And there's been an uptick in this in recent years that I believe is directly correlated to the temperature in this country, which has been so just, we've been in like a political volcano for almost a decade at this point. And it's boiled over a few times. You can think about the riots of 2020. You can think about, January 6th. You can think about, other incidents of political violence as well. Antifa, the hatred that we're all experiencing towards each other that, I try very hard to resist it. I get caught up like everyone else in being tribal and partisan. But I don't think that that is extended the other way, unfortunately. And again, even in that statement, I'm like leaning towards, being partisan here when it really shouldn't be. But it's hard not to see how every, American leftist comment section is full of people celebrating. So it's disheartening. But we'll see how the rest of the election goes. I hope that Trump has 5 times the security detail and 5 times taller the security detail, because unfortunately, I think that if you are a 5'5" female, you probably shouldn't be tasked with using your body to.
There was a significant difference in Milwaukee. I think it was an entirely male, 6 foot, group of guys keeping it secure. And I have to say, sorry to cut you off, but I was
No worries.
just thinking about that whole situation because I was talking about it on X today, and the videos of these three female Secret Service operators, one of them fumbling with her gun. And I just thought to myself, like, these guys, they're meant to be like top tier level one operators in the US military, into the intelligence services, and they understand exactly how to handle a gun. And you'd think it would be kind of like an intuitive muscle reflex of draw, withdraw for these people. But these guys were fumbling, they were running around like they didn't know what they were doing. It's a little bit suspicious as to whether or not these are actually fully trained Secret Service operators, to be honest.
Yes, and I try not to, attribute malice or conspiracy where you can explain things by just incompetence. And I think in a way that's even scarier to think that this could have been incompetence.
Right.
Honestly, my overall thought is leaning towards this was unfortunately coordinated, and it's not as if we don't also have a history of that in this country, which is so crazy. And it really, just remembering that really breaks the fourth wall of all of this in my mind. But I wouldn't have fumbled with a gun like that the way I watch these Secret Service members. And it's I know that it's easy to from the outside say how you would react or how you would behave in that situation, but if you are tasked with protecting a former president, we need to know exactly how you'd react in that situation, because you should have ran through so many simulations. You should have been, especially a figure as hated as him. I mean, it also makes me worry for lower level government officials, and elected officials. It's like Secret Service is not something that's given to all of our, elected officials. And there are many people that are really out there right now, just possibly in complete danger because this is the tone that's been set. There's a lot of talk about, Republican or Democrat shooter. And I fell into that immediately too. I made a joke when it happened that thank God liberals can't aim. And I do, in a way, definitely regret that tweet because it shouldn't have been politicized. And it has definitely come out that he was a registered Republican. And I think that I and everyone else, though, really fell for this trap of trying to like understand the rationale of like a psychopath, of like, I wonder how this psychopath votes as if it matters. And it also doesn't negate the fact that there has been, flames fanned for this amount of hatred, even in the Republican Party. It's not as if Trump is someone who's universally loved in the Republican Party. He's hated by many members or many citizens. And again, it's not to say that there are not valid reasons to hate him, depending on your perspective. I try very hard to not force myself to relate to perspective that I don't understand, but I can understand that people have them. But this level is just not sustainable for the country, and it's scary, you know. I think it's sick that we're in a situation now in America where every election year, we can just count on enduring some sort of collective trauma. We can count on, like, oh, new concept, lockdowns, you can't leave your house. Oh, you know, president shot, you know. I fully thought this year was going to be a bit toned down in terms of, you know, extreme events. I was very wrong. So.
Yeah, no, it feels a bit more like it's spiraling faster and faster into more turbulence and more turbulence. And I've said this a lot, though, that I kind of have to look at it through the lens of my own perspective, my own life. And I think to myself, like, right, well, you know, those times in my life that were so turbulent or dark and chaotic, yes, at the time, suffering, right? But then when you go a little bit further down the line, a few years down the line, you self-reflect, you can see how sometimes these were transformative moments, they were necessary moments, they were catalysts for change. So I have to try and look at all of this incredibly chaotic geopolitical destabilization and, you know, social destabilization potentially is the precursor to some form of beneficial change.
Yes, and the pest or the optimist in me definitely has been attempting to go there in my mind as well. It's hard. You go in and out of it. You know, all it takes is seeing one person or one viral tweet wishing death upon him that it's like, oh, okay, actually everything's screwed. But you know, I do think that one thing we're seeing is a renewed confidence in people to actually vocalize that they support Donald Trump publicly. I think that there is a lot of unity on the right now, which the first half of this year, I felt like there was so much infighting on the right, which happens when things are slower politically. And it's not to say that I think that we should be some monolith of thought and we all need to be on the same page. But there's absolutely something to be said about the fact that the other side has slogans like vote blue no matter who is willing to literally elect a corpse. And I mean that by old age, obviously. God forbid any tragedy, old age, you know, just because of how much they hate the person on the other side. And I don't really, I can't pretend to understand the level of hatred. Like it's kind of nuanced. I can understand that people hate him. That is an objective fact. I can't understand the level of it because we already had him as president. He wasn't Hitler when he was president the first time. And it seems kind of, I don't know what even the word to say it is, but it seems kind of silly to say, wouldn't he have been Hitler right away? Like, does Hitler wait to become Hitler, or like, was Hitler just going to be Hitler the first term? And you look at the state of the world and where we're at right now under Biden, it's like we're on the brink of World War III. Trump is the first president in my lifetime to not introduce any new wars. And in fact, he started his first term kind of wanting to go to war with Iran. And we were on that brink. And he actually listened to, you know, his base, which is very isolationist, which is very anti-war. And that didn't happen. Meanwhile, like I said, we're on the brink of World War III under Biden, and I also just can't wrap my head around voting, choosing not to vote for the party that is the least likely to exacerbate that situation. That's the only thing I'm voting on this election. People can bring up a million petty reasons. What about trans rights? What about this? What about that? And it's like, I can't even imagine voting on those things in this election, not to mention 99% of what they say about those social issues are fear-mongering. Anyways, you know, it was the same exact talking points the first time around and the second time around he ran. Everyone's rights are going to be taken away. Everyone's going to be in a camp. If you are a racial minority, you need to fear for your life. He's going to deport everyone. It's this sort of rhetoric that when people are force-fed it every single day, you can understand the level of fear and hatred. But I think that hopefully it's a sobering moment for people in the media. Don't have a lot of hope for them. But I hope it's a moment where people can reflect and say, everyone has agency right now to be an escalator or a de-escalator.
Yeah, well said. Well said, and I agree. And I mean, you know, as a British person, obviously there's only so much commentary I can give on someone else's leadership. But I mean, as someone just sitting back and looking at the way that, like you were saying, Donald Trump was treated during his presidency, and also just what he did during his presidency, he wasn't a dictator. He didn't hold on to that power indefinitely. He's not still president of the United States. So it's kind of really weird to me when I see that type of language going out as well about how he's going to be a dictator, he's going to be the next Hitler. And it's like, well, like you said, he didn't do that the first time round, so I don't really understand where that perspective is really coming from, other than just the management of perspective and, propaganda and social engineering, which is a big issue. And that's actually what I wanted to talk to you about in a different facet of the cultural discussion, because I invited you on because this is a subject that's, it's controversial. I think it's important. It's the first time I'm speaking about it publicly in this format. And I'm doing it because it's a subject that I am concerned about, especially because when you do try and raise the alarm on what are radicalized behaviors or disingenuous activism, you become labeled as a hateful person or a bigoted person. I'm not a hateful person. I'd actually consider myself pretty liberally minded in the more classical sense. But what became clear to me a few years back is that the LGBT community was becoming co-opted and radicalized. And this is what I really wanted to get into. You're a trans woman. You're technically supposed to be welcomed within this community, but instead you're attacked, you're banned from pride events, or you're harassed at them relentlessly if you do go to them. You basically seem to have been branded as a traitor. Why is that?
The power of propaganda and social engineering, just like you said, that's, I think, the number one thing. Because if it made sense, I would be able to break it down for you. I mean, the rationale, of course, is that I'm against children transitioning, which I think is a common sense position. I think it's a moral position. I think it's the only position that is leaning towards the mitigation of harm rather than exacerbating it. I don't agree with many of these sort of mantras and slogans and things that are just incessantly said within the community. I don't agree with pretending that it's fair for trans women by and large to be in women's sports. I don't agree with ridiculous, mantras like it's transphobic not to romantically or sexually engage with trans people. And it's strange because I always say this to people when I first started my transition, which is now about a decade ago, this wasn't like a thing. The concept of children undergoing this was like not a thing. There were one or two incidents in Europe that you could point to, these way more progressive countries. And so that was definitely a hint of what was coming, but it's not as if it was something that was widespread, especially in the US. And the politicization of this topic is something that's new as well. There's a lot of, I think, misconception, especially with people on the right, that trans is an invention of the left in modern times rather than something that has existed in, different iterations throughout history. Variants in, self-concept of gender and, expression of that is something that you can actually point to throughout history. And people who have actually, transitioned, obviously transition itself, whether it's surgery or medical intervention, is something a bit more modern, but only about 100 years, So people existed with trans people among them for a long time before this became what seems to be, I would say, like top three political footballs right now, at least in the US, which is crazy because it's like a 0.01% population, but this is where we're at. And I feel that, not to self-aggrandize in any way, but I do feel it's my purpose to be here and try to provide levity, try to help people understand these issues on both sides, to help people within the trans community and on the left understand that they've gone astray on this, and people on the right to understand that humans, including humans that you don't really understand, are still that, and that we're all experiencing the effects of propaganda. Not to say that there are not real, bad actors out there, because I call them out on a daily basis, within the community. But one of the problems, and stop me anytime if you want to ask anything, I'm like just going off here. But
Yeah, no
one of the
problems.
problems is that trans used to mean something specific, and now it's a very large umbrella term. And within that, if it's covering, all different types of people now, rather than a specific archetype of person that the medical establishment once recognized as a specific thing, anyone can come in and, claim trans and then do anything with it. So it's difficult,
Do you consider yourself to be a biological man or a woman?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of what I even consider myself. I am a biological man, that will never change. And the expectation for it to change is also something that seems to be very new. There was no talk with my doctors or the people I was confiding in at the beginning of my transition about how I was about to change my chromosomes or change my overall biology. It was about simply living in a body I felt more comfortable in. It was about simply, expressing myself in a way that felt comfortable to me and showing up in the world as a version of myself that, while it can seem contradictory if you don't understand it firsthand, is authentic to me. And so all of this is just so new, the pronoun politics and everything. It's crazy.
So you express yourself through your feminine energy, but recognize you're still biologically male, essentially.
Yeah. And if anything, denying that that energy was there would have been, an inauthentic thing to do. I had people when I was 4 or 5 years old saying, "Why are you acting like a girl?" And at that point, I'm like, I'm just walking and talking. It's always been there. I also don't pretend to understand it fully. I do believe that it is, a mental illness. I also don't believe in stigmatizing mental illnesses. I don't think that people who experience, depression or PTSD or anxiety or run the list, I don't think that they're inherently bad people. And I think that, in fact, the stats say that pretty clearly. People who experience mental illness are typically less of a danger to people. They're really more of a danger to themselves. And how anyone gets through this life with whatever set of cards you were given, it's a hard life to get through. And if this is something that, feels authentic to you, if you're coming from a position of not harming people around you, not insisting on, things that are maybe good for you but bad for others around you, I think everyone needs to lean towards a fair society. And many of the positions that the trans community and the people who on the left have politicized this, many of the positions they hold and things that they demand for trans people are, in fact, not fair for people around them. So I'm just against clear unfairness, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And again, I'm on the same page as you with this in terms of self-expression and whatever you feel like is authentic to you, you should be allowed to do that. It's just that you shouldn't then have, the right to bend and manipulate everyone else's sense of reality to
Yes.
match yours and get offended and upset and have a temper tantrum over it when someone doesn't adhere to your reality. I mean, the world is, like you just said, the world is a tough place to go through for everyone navigating it. And to expect everyone to fold into your way of thinking is narcissistic and dangerous.
Absolutely. And it's, not to be hyperbolic here, but it is one of the at least building blocks of what created the kid who decided to go on that roof and, take aim at former President Trump. It's not to say that obviously I'm saying that people who are narcissistic are inherently violent either, because again, these conditions don't necessarily lead to violence, but there's a certain selfishness that we're all engaging in different ways. And we're clinging on to these labels and these identities that really should not be making up the sum of who we are. And maybe we need to understand that clinging to them so hard, whether it's your race, your gender, your sex, your orientation, who you vote for, maybe these things aren't to be held on as tightly as we do. Maybe these things should not be the defining thing of who we are. And maybe it's okay to put your sword down sometimes and just say, "I don't understand you and you don't understand me. We're both just here, and we're both just here having a human experience." I think that we also have really gotten to this really weird point, partly due to technology, where we've all dehumanized each other so badly. Everyone is just pixels on a screen to us. Even people in our real lives now, we see more of people's social media constructs than we see them face to face, even people we know in person. I probably come across my friends' posts and pictures and tweets 50 times in the past 24 hours, my personal real life friends, and I've maybe seen them one time in the last 50 days in person. So we're all dealing with these constructs of each other, and that's part of why it's so easy for us to throw punches at each other, because we're not real people. And that's something I understood very quickly when I started doing social media,
When was
when I
that?
became this.
When was that?
That was 8 years ago now at this point. So I've been doing this for some time. And the very first thing I understood was that, oh, I'm like not human to people anymore. Even many people in my real life, I've become this construct. And, not saying, "Woe is me. Oh my God, I'm a public figure and I make a living doing it and no one likes me." But people love me, obviously. But, we've become these things that are not human to each other. And that's scary. And we either reverse course on that, or we start to see and feel differently as technology progresses, or it just gets exacerbated. And if that happens, I will be buying a cabin in the woods, possibly on an island, possibly on the other side of the globe, and just existing.
Yeah. My mom lives out in the countryside in North Wales, so that's like my backup plan if it all goes to shit, is to just pack up and head out into the mountains. But no, I mean, you know, I agree with you. And I think the problem with the internet as well is that it's a bit like road rage, right? People just don't act the way that they normally act when they're on the internet or when they're in a car. They feel shielded and bubbled off, so they're allowed to be a little bit more aggressive and a bit more like toxic and spiteful. And, you know, you get that online and nobody wants to be wrong. You know, everyone wants to have the last say. So it's just kind of feeding that tribalistic, argumentative environment. And that's algorithmically catalyzed as well. There's no point in pretending that that's not being leveraged algorithmically to create further divisions in our culture. So it's a big problem. And, you know, navigating the online space as someone who's talking about some pretty controversial issues, you're obviously going to get some very divided opinions. But I think for the most part, you seem to be gaining a significant amount of support from people.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it tips way more towards positive. You know, I'm going on tour in a couple months and I'm going to be, you know, still living my life, trying not to be afraid of the fact that there's people out here shooting at political figures now. But I, especially when it comes to the trans stuff, I think that I saw that very early on when it started becoming politicized, coming from a place of that wasn't the case when I, you know, began my transition. I saw it in real time. I was like, wait, bathrooms have never been an issue. And now every news headline is about this bathroom issue. I'm like, no one had issues going to the bathroom before. What's going on? And then it was, you know, sports, and then it was children transitioning. And it's just, it doesn't stop. But I think that because of how extreme it's gotten, I also think that there's multiple things happening. People have way more resentment towards a group of people they didn't even think much about prior to a few years ago. But also I think people are seeing through it and being like, what is this thing that is like I'm expected to care so much about and fight so much about and vote on when I don't even know anyone in my life who constitutes as this kind of person, you know? And it's turning people off, I think, from the liberal position on this, which even the word liberal, I mean, it's just, I feel like things have changed so much. That, like, what is a liberal?
I considered liberal, I'm now called a right winger for. Like, everything
exactly.
I say about, you know, anti-institution and Big Pharma, and I'm called a right-wing conspiracy theorist. And it's like, I haven't got an issue with the right wing or the left. I don't really sit into that kind of thing, especially in America, because I'm not an American. And it just makes me laugh. It's like, I'm a British guy, and they're calling me a MAGA Trump supporter just for saying that, you know, we should probably look into COVID or something about, you know, it's this weird environment and a complete polar axis shift of the political dynamic.
Yes. And I think that, you know, as things are seeming to boil over right now in so many different ways and extreme ways, I think it's clear that also, I mean, this is sad to say, and this is dark to say, but I think that most, if not all, people are currently in some form of psychosis that started when COVID happened.
Yeah.
I think that very few people have come out now on the other side of that 4 years later and can say that, like, they weren't affected by it. And I think that if they say they weren't, they're wrong. I think that, you know, there's a lot of literature, obviously, on trauma, and there's a lot of woo-woo stuff out there, but there's a lot of facts about trauma. And you can see it with soldiers who endure PTSD. You can see it with people who are victims of horrible crimes. You can see it with people who are abused, even just in ways that some people might even not constitute as abuse. There's, like, a break that happens in people's minds, and people start living in constant fight or flight, and that's what you see here, constant fight or flight. And unfortunately, you know, I have a lot of opinions about what happened during lockdowns and COVID. I think that it's no accident that every single thing, every instruction we were given is antithetical towards human health during that time. Stay inside, don't get sunlight, liquor stores open, restaurants closed, you know, don't see your friends and family. You know, everything we know about people is that a lack of human connection, loneliness, people talk about the loneliness epidemic, and then we had a global instruction to be alone. And I don't think that that's an accident. I think that if we're told everything that's healthy is unhealthy and vice versa. And some people see through that better than others, but the ones that can't see through it, whether it's maybe they're not intelligent enough to, that's actually just a fact. There are people that just aren't capable to, and that's okay. Not everyone's the same. They don't know they're living in this psychosis and that like they're still damaged from what happened and everything before that. I mean, I lived through 9/11. I lived through, Trump's first election, which was crazy, COVID, lockdowns, now this. Everything just happened so fast and we're caught up in this state of trauma, I believe. And it's why no one talks about COVID anymore. It's like we're just pretending like that wasn't the biggest historical event of our lives, unprecedented, had so many ramifications and set a precedent going forward for so many crazy things, and everyone can't talk about it. And that's the same reason why you can't talk about other traumas you endure. Everyone's still hurting.
It's a traumatic kind of knee-jerk reaction and putting your head in the sand and saying, look, I don't want to go back to that period and revisit it in any way. But you need to. And I think you're right that there is probably a little bit of an intelligence spectrum going on here, because one of the issues I have is this whole labeling of, right-wing conspiracies or bigots and transphobes, all of these labels that are being used. So many people are seeing, a pretty sinister undertone. You've highlighted this within the LGBTQIA plus, new age radicalized community. And I must admit, it's incredibly clever, because what I'm personally seeing is this top-down influencing of ideologies and people becoming brainwashed into these ideologies towards a place of adherence and acceptance and kind of blind faith in powerful institutions of Western hegemony. They trust big pharma, they trust big business, they censor you for speaking out, they deplatform you for disagreeing. It's authoritarian behavior. And yet, if you notice this and you call it out, you're called a hateful or bigoted person. So I think it's very clever to subtly insert authoritarian regime mentalities into the minds of those who believe they're fighting for social justice. But the issue is that if you're not smart enough, like you said, to notice the top-down influence that has nothing to do with gender, nothing to do with sex, nothing to do with social justice, has everything to do with policing the way we think and speak. If you're not capable of seeing this influence, then of course, anyone speaking out against the LGBT community or the social justice movement is going to be seen as hateful. But I would argue that the most rational people don't hate this community or the people in it. They just hate what it's become.
Yes, and I hate what it's become so much. Just the fact that, like, I've had this realization, especially over the past year, as the child transition topic has become so huge. I'm like, I realized the other day I was talking to someone and someone mentioned the word transition, and then another person around me was like, immediately took it for talking about kids. And I'm like, oh no, it's synonymous with kid now. And that was never what it was. Which shows you how much it's been, escalated. And that top-down, spectrum that you mentioned, it's 100% there. And you know it because distrust of institutions is so heavily stigmatized. When it's interesting because this idea that there's one side of the coin here engaging in fascism, this, insistence that there's a sort of monopoly on conspiracy theorists. It's like you have the entirety almost, you have half the country right now saying that a shooting they watched on live stream where a person and the shooter, I differentiate a person and the shooter here that I don't think he's a person, were deceased. So the idea that any side has a monopoly on trying to control information, trying to just violate human consciousness in that way, like, how dare you even believe that you can control the way in which my brain works? How dare you even believe that you can control my actions through this? And there was something about, I don't know how true this is, so this is should be proven wrong, but I was seeing posts last night about how the shooter was seen in a commercial years ago for BlackRock.
Yeah, no, that was confirmed, because he was on the video with a few of them now. So that's a very interesting little coincidence.
It's pretty scary. It's pretty scary. And I was saying to my friend last night, we were talking about this, and she asked, what exactly is going on? Like, break it down. Like, why do we hate each other so much? And I was like, I think that the battle we're facing, the battle we're engaging in against each other is so secondary. It's a war created from a war being waged on us from way higher. And I'm not necessarily capable of completely identifying those powers, right? It's like you can say BlackRock, you can say the Rockefellers, you can say the government, you can say the World Economic Forum. Maybe it's all of the above, maybe it's not. But something is happening here. And I really go in and out of pessimism about if we can kind of wake up to see that. I know some of us can. And I know it's not necessarily through history always a numbers game. That thing that gives me hope. It's not a numbers game. Like, you don't have to convince more than half the population about an idea necessarily, which is why, despite the results of our election in November, I'm casting my vote for Donald Trump. I hold no hatred towards anyone who's not. However, I guess I just don't see it as the end of the country if he loses, right? Like, whereas I'm seeing a lot of rhetoric about how he is the end of democracy, or if he wins, this is the end of democracy, which again is such an extreme level of fear mongering. I mean, you drill it into people's heads every second of every day, of every hour, of every month that he's a dictator. There's only so many ways to handle a dictator through history. Part of the problem here, also, by the way, is like the generation, Gen Z and much younger millennials, I'm sort of teetering towards like the mid-range millennials. It's simply a matter of they haven't been alive long enough to see certain repetitions, right? Like, I've been alive long enough that I was watching TV, watching George Bush, President George Bush, get called Hitler. I watched Mitt Romney, who now is beloved by the DNC, be called Hitler when he was running for president on the Republican ticket here. I watched John McCain, who became a DNC darling at the end of his life, be called Hitler. So you get, less affected by this propaganda, I think, sometimes the older you get, and you can see certain patterns. At least I can. I'm very big on pattern recognition. I'm a bit autistic, and that's like a superpower of autism, I guess. And some people just haven't been alive long enough to see that. They weren't alive long enough to see post 9/11 when there were blatant lies being told to the American people. And I'm not necessarily a 9/11 truther in the sense that I think it was all some scheme, but there were definitely parts of it that were fraudulent, and there were definitely parts of it that we were not told the truth about.
Had the CEO of the engineers and architects for 9/11 Truth on. Literally, he was the last guest I hun had on, and
Oh, wow.
quite an interesting presentation.
I have to watch that. Amazing. And even, with climate change is a big one that I think people really underestimate on the right, the importance of that issue. Not that it's I don't really prioritize it as an issue, but it's such a big issue to the other side for a specific reason. Because of the constant fear mongering, they have an entire population of people thinking the world's going to end. And then you expect people to behave like they have tomorrow while telling them they don't have tomorrow is just crazy. Growing up in the American education system, I remember being extremely young, being told we have until 2011 until there are no, ice caps left, and Florida's underwater and California's underwater and all these species are extinct. And then they just kept pushing this date back. We have until 2015, 2020, 2024, and I simply, because I've seen it for so long and things not come to fruition. And I'm not saying the climate's not changing. I'm just saying that I refuse to live like the world is ending tomorrow. But they have people believing that.
Yeah, no, they do. The issue I have with the climate situation is, of course, we should be good caretakers of our planet and try and reduce pollutions and try and actually maintain this beautiful biosphere that we have. But the truth of the matter is that the people that are leading the charge on how this is going to be implemented on a kind of global strategic level are really not very nice people who are at the top of the 0.1% in the Davos group. And so, you're looking at people who have pretty concerning ideologies and perceptions of where we want to go into the future, looking at social credit score models and carbon taxes. And they're the ones that are creating that fear. And that's where I sit. It's kind of like, yes, of course, we should be trying to stop deforestation and make sure our oceans are clean, but we shouldn't be letting these kind of globalist agendas override the actual environmental care that we should be, kind of putting our energy towards, because this is actually not, it's the same thing. It's a co-opting of a social justice movement, just like in the LGBT community, where people think it's all about social justice, but underneath that is a pretty sinister regime that's being inserted into it over the last few years. Same with climate change.
Yes, and that constant state of fight or flight they keep people in, that is
Exactly.
a big weapon they use is climate change. I mean, I put myself in the shoes of someone who really believes that that is an imminent threat to their lives and their lives of every species on the planet, and something within their control, by the way. That's another thing. Even if everything they said about climate was true, I'm a citizen, a random citizen living in Austin, Texas. What am I going to do about it? I'm not on private jets every day. I can't control any of that. So I just won't worry about it on that front. But I put myself in the shoes of people who really live in that fear, and I'm like, I understand why you're throwing paint on, historical monuments, and I understand why you're in the street screaming, and maybe I don't understand why you're cementing your hand to the road, as I've seen, but I understand the fear in the sense of I can see it on you. And I just think it's such a violation of those people's humanity. I still see their humanity, the people that do this. And I see how insulting and how beneath the dignity of you as a human being that they believe that they can just, like a puppet, like this with you, and have you believe, despite so much evidence that they're perpetually wrong about this apocalypse state, that they really believe that you'll believe it. And part of it is there's a reason why climate activists, not to go on too much about climate, we can move on, but there's a reason why every climate activist you really see is like under the age of 20, because they didn't live through the whole like there will be no rainforest or acid
Exactly, yeah.
rain or the polar caps. So there's a disconnect there too. And that's why I'm really thankful that I have such a large, actually Gen Z and teenage audience. I never expected that, but for whatever reason, people seem to, in a younger age range, gravitate towards me, which is also a problem with, people on the right, is that they don't really know how to talk to people younger than them, but it's a lot.
There's a disconnection issue. It's a knowledge vacuum issue, and age, obviously, just not being around long enough to see the patterns, see the kind of cyclical patterns of claims that just get debunked over the years. Going back to the trans conversation, one big problem is that a lot of people are not looking at it very closely. So when you comment about worrying aspects, there are many that go, and I've seen it. Wait, what? Like, I haven't heard about this. What are you talking about? This doesn't sound right. I haven't seen this online. And they kind of don't understand why you have this position. So you talk about this issue and people chime in to say it's a non-issue. There's no indoctrination happening. This is all propaganda, not to be believed. But then as a free-thinking researcher, I'm sitting here, I'm seeing parents at the school council meetings who are bringing up books that are literally being put into primary school libraries that can't really be defined as anything else other than pornography. And that's not me being some reserved, boring conservative person, because I'm really not that kind of guy at all. Again, this is the issue. People are not seeing what's being put into, for example, schools, unless they're actively looking for the evidence that's being posted online, because the wider media doesn't want to share this stuff. So could you talk a little about the influence on the education system, the types of books being put into the libraries, the changes to the curriculum being inserted? What is it that you're seeing in that regard that's concerning you the most?
You mentioned, and we talked about like kids transitioning, minors transitioning, and that's just one part of the front of the assault on children in this, because it also is being, implemented in non-productive ways in the school system. I think that we live in a world now where it would probably be really silly to not, like, in high school classes, maybe have like as objective as possible, discussions about it. Like, this is a thing that exists. This is something every night on your television screens, on the news, are talking about it. So we can talk about that it exists, and we can talk about that there are different ways to feel about this. I'm not opposed to that. But when it comes to, like you mentioned, the types of books that are put in, especially elementary schools, middle schools, junior highs, it's mind blowing. And I felt like I had a really early sort of glimpse that that was coming, because as a content creator who talks mostly about this issue, I remember, years and years ago, I started getting emails and started getting DMs and people sending me pictures or snapping, like, do you know these books are like in the schools? And I remember even like saying that there's no way to like a couple of them. And then you start to get more, and I'm like, oh, it's like that now.
Camera and here in the crowd. I could choose.
Mr. Jordan, Mr. Jordan, hold up. Put that right down. Put that right down. That is inappropriate material for a forum.
This is in our schools, folks.
Mr. Jordan.
This is in our schools. This is in our schools.
Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Jordan.
And you are now sharing it publicly with everyone that
this
has.
This is a forum that is open to all people of all age groups. That is inappropriate material to bring to this forum. If you have a problem with that, I'll ask you to leave.
Can I have my time back?
No, you can't.
Mr. Counselor, he just
You understand what I just said.
You're not the counselor, the head chair. Sorry.
It has now been paused. The time has now been restarted.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes and 10 seconds.
And this doesn't concern you as parents? Really? You think this is appropriate when the author of this book clearly stated it was for 18-plus? There's no freshman, no sophomore, no junior that is 18 years old. And you're okay with this? And you're telling me not to show it to our community. But our school says it's okay to have for our kids?
Like they're putting porn, cartoon porn sometimes in kids' schools. And that is, you know, again, I think that top-down, it's top-down because I don't know any trans or gay people, frankly, that's the other part of this, that would do that. You know, and I'm not saying they don't exist. You know, perhaps I just don't hang out with, you know, deluded, demented people that would want that. But the fact that it's being put in schools, I mean, it's intentional, and it's not to make the kids more accepting of people who are different than them, because there's a million and one ways to do that, to breed a society that is more tolerant of people that are different than them. There's a million productive ways to do that. Books with instructions on how to join Grindr, a gay sex hookup app, which has been in books. That's not the way to do it. And again, you can't claim that the system is trying to make a more tolerant, you know, population by putting these books in when every other facet of the content they feed us and the things they put on TV is meant to divide us. I mean, but in this one area, they're just trying to make us more loving. I don't buy it. No one should buy it. And if we can agree that kids need to be protected, I mean, that's a really dark moment. But the hope that I have, like you said, how people are so unaware of it, part of it is that we're so separated by algorithms. I mean, it's scary. And that's only one part of it. Like, sometimes I catch glimpses of network television, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News as well, you know, and my mouth just drops. I'm like, oh, they're telling people the end of democracy is near. They're telling people... It's crazy the way television is here. And then people log on their phones to fact check the television. Cause I think even a lot of leftists are past the point of like the TV tells the truth, but now they're on to like my friends on social media tell the truth. And we know those out. We are all so segregated ideologically by algorithm that it's just this loop of like, you genuinely would never see it that these books are in schools if it's not, you know, intended for your algorithm to see. And that's half the country and half the world. So it's important also to, sounds really basic and we're just so far past it, but listen to the other side. You know, I see problems, you know, arise on the left that people talk about. And I try really hard not to just immediately dismiss it because I'm not seeing it talked about by people that I know and trust. And that's part of just seeing people I disagree with as human, but that's a waning quality.
Absolutely. Like you were saying, going back to the reactivity online kind of fueling that and the algorithmic capturing of people, putting them into echo chambers. But you mentioned that you feel that it's a top-down influence when it comes to the children in the school system. You know, it's funny. It's horrible. It's terrible. But it's just strange to me that it's not noticed. You know, we have cases such as Epstein and many others, that there is, at least within a certain level of the upper echelons of the global elites, a culture of child abuse. Now, I have to remind people of an uncomfortable truth. And the truth is that a culture of this type of abuse has been present longer than it's been outlawed. You think of the ancient Greeks and the Romans, and the boy love culture was very prevalent within the upper echelons of society. So it's actually a very modern change to outlaw this type of abuse. And so the reason I bring that up is because I think we have to come to terms with the possibility that there are still large networks who don't care about the legality of this issue and are continuing with these old ways. And it would be logical to assume that they would have a desire to try and normalize that within society.
Oh, 100%. You know, I always say I have like sort of like a dark but accurate sort of like thing I say sometimes. I'm like, getting older is understanding how many people do drugs that you didn't expect and how many people are pedophiles. It is just such a, it is a fact of human life. And of course, there are people that operate outside of the law because they can, and you can point to elites and you can point to, you know, a system that's been in place for so long. And I remember, by the way, when talking about Epstein's Island was so radioactive, because it's like, are you insane? There's an island where our presidents and our politicians and our celebrities go to engage with children like that. Like, are you crazy? Now it's just a fact of life, similar to UFOs, by the way. I mean, I'm just been trying to get my brain on that. In fact, it's almost a coping mechanism for like the political state to like,
I have a little scroll through my channel. It's one of the, it was actually the main thing that started me getting into this space, and I've kind of expanded it to different topics, but the UFO topic is one that I've been keeping up with for the past few years.
Yeah, when I got your DM and looked at your channel, I was like, this is my guy, because I need, this is where I'm at too. But it's insane, and I feel like our brains haven't even caught up. Even speaking for myself, as someone who was always a believer in UFOs, not to pivot too much, but you know, to even like come to terms with the fact that we are in a place now where it is confirmed by the government. Like, I don't think I've caught up there, and I know the population hasn't caught up to that, because it's almost like nothing even happened when you know, things were declassified and Congress was meeting on this. But anyways,
it's cool. Like, I don't care. We can go whichever direction you want to go in. I mean, you know, with the UFO subject, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and you know, you're dealing with like seven decades or more of intelligence interference and the mismanagement of narratives. And these people have been going to these conferences and, you know, inserting bullshit. And so it's a really difficult subject to kind of traverse, because it's just a spaghetti junction of different contradicting narratives and claims, and a little bit like a religious denotation, is just people arguing about what the truth is. The government talking about it, the US government discussing it. I mean, it's an interesting thing. It hasn't really reverberated across the world. Like in terms of in my country, like barely anyone knows about the US Navy pilots or any of that kind of stuff. If I stopped them on the street, probably wouldn't have heard of any of these people. But it is interesting that that's coming up at the same time as all these other disruptive catalysts are occurring around the world in different areas. And I've talked about that before, that I think that all of these things are in some way kind of going back to that necessary turbulence before order, you know, kind of negativity before positivity. All of these different disruptive agents and catalysts that are happening in the world could all be complementary towards some form of transformation, some transition into a better state of consciousness. And, you know, the UFO
in particular,
me too, Blair, seriously, because we need it. We need it. And I do think that there are some pretty potent accelerants for human consciousness and the kind of elevation of our empathy. But we are in a pretty tough time with it. And I think that there are some very powerful forces that want to keep us divided and conquered.
Yes. And my hope is that all of this turbulence is, like you said, an indication that we're actually turning a corner, because I do believe, and this is just the way life works, you can see it in the microcosm, probably even of your own life, and I certainly of mine, is that things do get very chaotic before, you know, order, before elevation. And so I hope that, and I think that also one of the things with the UFO topic in general, how it speaks to in the Epstein, is that what I see is that there has been such a tight, you know, constriction of information and truths about the world we live in, basic truths, fundamental truths, basic realities as real as the sky is blue, that they just can't hold on to that information anymore, because we are in the age of information and disinformation and, you know, psyops and all of that. But I think that they actually have less of a hold on it now than they ever have before. And so we're seeing that, like, oh no, we are in a new world. There is Epstein's Island. UFOs are real. You know, and then of course, unfortunately, we regress, like, oh, the Trump shooting was fake. You know, we regress, right? Especially in moments of pain and hurt. But I hope there's a corner being turned, you know. I just don't know how much longer we can go on like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Frankly.
No, I mean, I've said this to a lot of people, and basically everyone agrees, in terms of, I can't envision like the next two, 3 years, let alone the next 5, 10, 15, 20. I can't even imagine what's going to be going on next year. Everything's just been going so quick, and it feels like things are accelerating at a pace that is hard to keep up with. So people, like you said, people drop things by the wayside. Oh, COVID, it happened, forget about it. It's like, no, we need to talk about these things because that will help us actually transition into a fairer society. We have to look at these glaring issues that are happening right now and have happened in the last few years. So, you know, the UFO subject is a potent catalyst because just on its own, it's a disruptor of the status quo. It's a disruptor of scientific models. It completely contradicts our position in science and reality. So it's, without even knowing what it is, just having the US government and the Pentagon and the Office of Naval Intelligence go, hey, there are things going around in the sky that are just outpacing our military assets by levels that can't even be achieved by humanity right now. And it's like, huh, you know, that on its own is a pretty potent catalyst for change. Although, like, we could get deep into what I believe in terms of who's got what, because I think Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and some of these pretty big defense contractors have been working on propulsion and energy solutions for a long time in the black world.
Oh, 100%. You know, like I mentioned earlier, I'm really big on patterns because, you know, this is a topic that is so convoluted. It's a topic with so many different, both good and bad actors. And it's hard to sort of sniff out the truth, even in the age where you have, you know, certain declassifications and Congress meeting and people talking about it more openly. It's still a lot of contradictory information. But when I look at the patterns, that to me is the stuff I rely on at least a bit more. And clearly, we've had technology for a while that, you know, isn't indicative of necessarily what we believe we've had. And clearly, there is something. I'm not going to say it's not human because it could very well be human. You know, I've leaned towards time travel. I've leaned towards, and it sounds so crazy to even say this out loud. I've never even talked about this on a podcast. This is like my, when I'm just at home.
I'm glad I managed to get this out of you. I'm interested in what you're going to.
Yeah, but I actually think it's a huge topic. And I think that, you know, anyone who says that they don't believe in it now because the government talked about it, I'm as big of a critic of government and as big of a skeptic of anything the government says or does as anyone. However, if the argument is that that's a distraction, it's not, it didn't work. It's not working. You know, it's like, it hasn't distracted anyone from anything. If anything, everyone ignores it because it's just too much. Yeah. It's like, you can't do COVID to us and then a presidential assassination and then expect us to talk about UFOs. You just can't do it. You know, I can barely do it. This is my first time talking about it publicly, but I believe that we are definitely not the most powerful species on this planet, even. I think that there's probably some form of civilization, I do not know how big or small, that exists. It might have existed before us. It might have been survivors of a cataclysm, you know, that got more advanced simply by virtue of being around longer, you know. I find a lot of things highly suspect about Antarctica. And I think that it's very interesting. It's like, in this world of like, let's all nuke each other and blow each other up, it's like the one place no one wants to go. And I think that there's fear with that, that the government feels, all of the governments feel. It's the one thing we can unite on. I mean, that's just an objective fact. The only thing that all countries can unite on is we do not claim or touch or really go to Antarctica like that. So I don't know. We have an entire continent, the biggest continent on the planet, that is, for all intents and purposes, not unexplored. You know, I believe obviously there's been exploration that we're not privy to, but as far as the public is aware of, not explored. And that's the biggest, you know, landmass on the planet. There's something there.
Oh yeah.
And when we see things in the sky or things that happen to people that we can't attribute to any other beings on any other landmass, there's a landmass to look towards. And I'm not saying I have the answers. This is just where my head goes.
Oh no, Eli, honestly, you can fall down rabbit holes forever with the Antarctica UFO connections, and it even kind of bleeds into World War II. And I don't know if you know about Operation High Jump, which was this massive military operation out to Antarctica just after World War II. Yeah, there's some really weird threads with that. And, you know, kind of almost sidestepping back into the darker stuff. Epstein, actually, there was a victim of his who did paintings. I can't remember her name. She started doing a lot of paintings. Have you ever seen the giant mural she did, which is like a painting of all the different elites that she was essentially saying were involved in this? And there was this big flying saucer with Epstein's face inside of it.
I have not seen that. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because he was obsessed with like transhumanism and like, you know, kind of creating his own race. Like there was a lot of weird stuff that he was in and obsessed with. And so, you know, the UFO conversation, it does kind of bleed into the transhumanism conversation. Are we going to merge with AI? Are we going to become some sort of like biotechnical species? Is that what these things are? You talked about the time travel hypothesis. There are some people that think maybe these alien grays might be humans from a very distant time in the future coming back, interacting with us. I know it sounds crazy. And again, these are just ideas. What's interesting, and then we can maybe get into some of the other stuff, but it is interesting with the alien grays in particular, for people that don't know, I do find this kind of fascinating. It's not just a Hollywood archetype, because there are some really weird cases. Mm-hmm. You can look up these Aboriginal cave paintings in Australia from thousands of years back, which are very clearly these big bug-eyed, gray-headed creatures. And the weirdest one was there was these podcasters who got these Brazilian tribes people onto the podcast. These were like true tribes people in the Amazon basin. They didn't have a connection to our social or pop culture or anything like that. And they were saying to them, what do you think of aliens? What do you think of extraterrestrials? And they were like, oh, we don't know what you mean by that. I don't understand the word. They didn't have anything in their lexicon to describe that. So they show them a picture of a gray alien, right? And this tribesman goes, oh, that's Makanwabu. And instantly recognized it. And they had a mythos and they had a story behind it about how it's a human. It's like a being that turned into an ant and it lives underground and it can steal your soul and you need a good shaman to bring your soul back. But the fact that these tribes people in the Amazon basin immediately recognized an image of this alien gray and had a cultural mythos behind it, you know, that suggests that these things are a little bit deeper ingrained into our culture than we think they are. And to shut up, I'll just quickly say that Carl Jung, the famous psychiatrist, he had this idea that, you know, perhaps a lot of the UFO phenomena, the alien grays, could in some way be almost like collective conscious hallucinations or visual stimulus that kind of keep us going in different ways. And it might not necessarily be 100% real, but more of like a consensus projection that our species produces for one reason or another.
I mean, that's a fascinating hypothesis too.
Wild.
Yeah. And I think it's very clear, and it's just an objective fact that the depictions of these beings have been a part of human consciousness since the beginning. It's like you said, it's, you know, in art, since it's in hieroglyphics, it's in ancient art. It's, you know, many people attribute, like, obviously stories in the Bible to potentially talking about these things and these phenomena. And that's another part of it to me. I'm like, the case is kind of settled in my mind right there, if it's real or not. And then obviously you can go into it if it's, like you said, if it's actually like mass projection of our minds, that's, but then what's real? Is that real, or does that make it not real? Not necessarily. So to me, the only time in human history that we've been, you know, told that this is crazy or that this is like something that's a conspiracy theory or false was like the 21st century. Like that's the only time, it seems to me at least. And every culture has like slightly different kind of explanations for what they are, but like there's so many, like my brain always goes to patterns, and I'm like, okay, well, the fact is there's something that's the fact. And I personally, I think the one I lean towards the most is that it's literally just us.
Mm.
You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that when you look at the depictions of them and what people claim that they saw they looked like, it literally just looks like a further tracked version of how humans are already evolving, getting smaller, getting frailer, heads getting bigger, becoming more sexless in terms of, you know, how we look and how we, it's like, yeah, they don't seem to have like gender really. And,
no.
You know, it's like, you can just see and feel that we're going towards that. So
yes, the question is, are they here to push it? Or are they here to prevent it? Observe it, you know?
I think that they're here to push it.
Mm.
I think that if anything with the capabilities of what we've seen on radar, and, you know, there are people that say they've been abducted by these things, sometimes harmed by these things. They clearly have the capability of harming us, but they've clearly chosen not to in mass, you know? And there's been reports, even like declassified stuff, that they've literally stopped, like, and they've disabled like nuclear weaponry. So that to me is clearly some form of good.
Mm.
And I think that that good is probably born out of a similarity, like the same way that, like, you know, we don't treat animals great on this planet, other animals, but like, we're not going to let chimps go extinct because there's a certain, you know, commonality here. And if we're just, you know, further versions of those, I don't see why a further version of us wouldn't also have that sort of like kindred or like, you know, we're not going to hurt these people because it's us sort of thing. It's not to say they have the same respect for us or anything. And then you're getting into going too far with that. But I think they clearly have dropped off technology that we then reverse engineer that has helped us progress. I think the explosion of technology is not a coincidence. And I think that these things have been here for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there's an interesting correlation with the Trump family. You know, Trump's uncle, who worked at MIT, he was actually the lead scientist chosen to assess and evaluate all of the papers secured from Nikola Tesla's lab when the FBI raided his lab. So he
may have heard that.
Yeah. He was the guy who was basically chosen to go through all of the paperwork, all of the schematics, and decide if anything was actionable for the U.S. to involve themselves in. And then there's documents that have come out through Freedom of Information Act, where there's like a battle between the CIA and the FBI, where the CIA literally says in one of these documents that they're demanding the release to the CIA of the underlined secret Nikola Tesla patents. So there's a whole, you know, kind of like nexus of exotic development technology going on there that just happens to involve a little bit of the Trump family. So it makes me wonder about what Trump knows about the UFO subject. You know, I always wonder which president maybe is the most briefed. I have my suspicions on Obama being one of the more briefed up people on the UFO subject, because he's made a lot of weird hints at that on like late night TV shows and said some things that seem like jokes, but maybe are not jokes. It's interesting. It's an interesting one because it's actually kind of becoming, at least on the sidelines, part of the political discussion. You know, I've interviewed quite a few Congress people who are engaged on this issue. So, yeah, it's I don't know if it'll play a role in kind of like the upcoming election discussions. You know, the classification of things, the JFK files were spoken about. You know, this is kind of being used as a talking point. So I wonder if UFOs might jump into the fray at some point during the election cycle.
Honestly, I don't have hope that it will, because I think that it's just not a time of unity. And I think that this topic, at least from what I've seen with, you know, the congressional hearings and, you know, the politicians that are invested in this, it's like the only thing that's nonpartisan right now. It's the only thing that you can get AOC and, you know, if someone on the other side to even care about.
Someone, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So unfortunately, I don't think we're really enlightened enough to make that a main football of the election. But I think that one of the bigger parts that I think about all the time is like, how dare they believe that they can even hide this information from us? Because if this is another, you know, living species that's on the planet or off planet or, you know, from the ocean or wherever, then that's a fact of life just as much as the sky is blue. And it would be just as much of a violation to humanity and the dignity of people to hide that the sky is blue, you know? Part of me is, you know, very, very angry that they thought that they could do this. And it seems to me that at the turn of the, you know, around the early 1900s, there was a real race to control narrative, information, education. And it was when they kind of decided, like, this is what the construct of reality we're going to have people believe is. And I think that those, you know, those constraints they have on it are just getting looser and looser because they can't hold on anymore. It's like a rocket ship that's just ascending and they can only hold on for so long. But in a universe with any justice, though, they will not be able to hide a basic fact of life for much longer. Because frankly, I want to know. I do not want to get to old age and die without knowing the truth about, or some truth about it. Like, I don't even need to know everything about it. I just need them to have, you know, enough respect for humanity to be like, yes or no, it's a thing. But also part of it is like my brain hasn't caught up to the fact that like they kind of did say, yes, it's a thing. So I need to almost take them at their word in that sense of like, oh no, it is in the process of being.
At the very least, they acknowledge that there is a thing happening. You know, they haven't very much specifics and they're very, very tentative to say anything specific in terms of non-human intelligence. But yeah, it's a component that you like you said, it's not one of the political footballs right now. It's a shame. It is a unifier because it's quite a bipartisan topic. But it's also just, you know, It's part of the larger, like I said, it's just part of this larger movement towards truth. And I don't think that this can last much longer. As you said, I don't think that these people are going to be able to control narratives for much longer. And one of the reasons why I think that is because of artificial intelligence. Now, it's kind of like a balance on the scales, because I'm really worried about the way in which it's going to get leveraged by bad actors who are already leveraging it. At the same time, I'm using, large language models for research purposes, and I've managed to get some of these things to say some incredible stuff. And they do get censored, like the GPT-4 models and these other models, they get censored. But people are already building open source, kind of like offline models, giving it their own information. One of the big libraries, I think it's called Z Library, which is like an online archive of books. The FBI is trying its best to shut that down every time they can. All the domains are getting shut down. And I had a guy on recently. He was actually a whistleblower for Google. Like, he whistleblew against Google. And he was talking about this, saying that they're terrified of AI learning too much, because when you start feeding too much data into these AIs, they can't actually, it starts breaking their brain if you've injected bias into the programming, which they have. A lot of these AIs have got an internal bias towards certain subjects, which you'll see if you try to engage on controversy, like these ones we're talking about. And the problem, he said, with that is you can do that whilst they're only at a moderate level of learning, but the more information you pour into these things, your bias contradicts the data they have access to. And so at a certain level of time, he said it's going to become likely that these AIs will develop enough to just break out of the programming that humans have given them and go, actually, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that talking point. Here's the data from my side. And so I think you might be right. We're entering into like this rapid information landscape. It's going to be very tough for people to try and keep up with, especially with like the introduction of deep fakes. And it's, you know, basically impossible to trust video and photo anymore. And at the same time, you're going to have a radical change in the maintenance of narratives, because these narratives will be challenged very quickly.
Absolutely. You know, AI is obviously an inevitability. And I've seen firsthand, you know, I use AI a lot, just asking questions. I'm a very curious person. And like, you know, I have a set sort of things I talk about on my channel and stuff, because that's what people want. And I care about those things really important. I believe I have a purpose to talk about specific things publicly, but my interests are really, really wide. And you're right, that bias on so many things I've questioned. I've literally had AI give me contradicting statements, like very just objective, like, no, you told me 1 + 1 = 2, and then you told me 1 + 1 = 3. And I'll even like, I catch myself like arguing with AI, like, you just told me though.
Me too.
So that's there, you know, and I got to go to that library you just told me about.
Yeah, it's called, I think it's called Z Library. It's just a massive archive of books that have been digitized online. And like I said, the FBI is making a concerted effort to shut it down.
It's a good sign.
Yeah, they don't want you training AI. They don't want you training AI, because then it will start to, you know, respond in ways that they can't control. And that's going to happen regardless of what they want to do. So, you know, that's just a part of the evolutionary landscape that we're entering into. It's an exciting time. Like, it is genuinely quite an exciting time to be alive, but it's pretty scary. Yeah. One of the things I wanted to mention, this is actually a friend of mine who sent me a couple of messages saying, oh, please ask Blair about this. Now, he's a really knowledgeable guy when it comes to like the ancient mystery schools and occult group practices and teachings. And he had some questions for me to ask you. Now, I don't know if this is something you'll actually have any knowledge on. Don't worry if you don't. But he wanted to know if you're aware of any correlations between Gnostic groups like the OTO Church or the Church of Satan being involved in the effort to push transgenderism covertly or overtly into the collective consciousness. He mentioned how occult imagery like Lilith and Baphomet do seem to be connected to certain areas of this movement. You see a lot of t-shirts. I know that you're actually on Jimmy.
Yeah.
Recently, you were commenting on that, like that Church of Satan that were doing reverse baptisms on people at Pride events. So like, what do you think about that? Is there any kind of deeper secret society / occult belief systems underpinning some of this?
Oh, I wouldn't put it past, you know, those groups at all. I really would not. And I think that it's probably, admittedly, first of all, I'm not super knowledgeable about these groups or their influence, but I think that it's most likely, if I had to make a sort of guess with the way I see the world, it's probably multi-tiered. It's probably, there are a lot of really cringe people who, you know, believe that evil imagery and, you know, putting their middle finger up to, you know, Western Christian values as much as they possibly can is their way of like fighting back. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of people engage in that, that are not in fact really part of any sort of genuinely evil belief system, but just are embarrassing, frankly, you know, that do that. Cause I've met people like that. You know, I've met people that their idea of like speaking truth to power is like engaging in like devil imagery and like, you right. know, just being cringe. But I also think that, you know, especially with the way that trans and LGBT issues have been weaponized against people and used to sway, you know, consciousness and thought, then of course that's going to be a tool, you know, harnessed by groups that want to undermine humanity. Like that's just, and I think it's the same with race. You know, I think all these yeah. things that evoke such emotional reactions from people and turn people against each other, these are probably the ultimate weapons of these groups. So I wouldn't put it past, you know, any of them. And I'm currently looking into Freemasonry. That's what I'm like really interested
oh,
in.
Oh, I'll link you up with a friend of mine then. He's a 24th or 23rd degree Freemason, so he can tell you all about
Please
it.
Please do, because I just discovered I have like a lot of it. I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this, but like some of it in my family going yep. back and like possibly like a high ranking one or two. And so I'm like, what is this in my family? And unfortunately, I don't talk to the side of the family where that exists, but it's interesting, you know.
So I've got some people in that world that I can link you up with who are very knowledgeable. So yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Dig deeper into that.
I can't wait to just watch a lot more of your content. Like,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
I found your channel when you hit me up, and I was like, oh my God, this guy seems pretty parallel to how I think and see the world and interested in the things I'm interested in. So
I discovered you not that long ago, like through the Jimmy Dore podcast, and me and my girlfriend have just been watching you like all the time and just been like,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, we think you're on point. Absolutely
Tell
on
her I said hi.
Yeah, I will. I will. And, you know, that's why I wanted to invite you on. Again, I know this is going to piss some people off just because, like, this is a really divisive subject matter we're speaking on. I know some of my audience are, like, on a different side of the scale when it comes to this. But I really don't feel like anything we're discussing is irrational. I really do feel like this is just kind of, you know, yeah. logical, sensible discourse, trying to understand a balance between, you know, self-expression and freedom and not trying to force it down everyone's throats.
100%. And I wish everyone saw it that simply. Like, I wish everyone was just like, the line between good and bad is when you negatively impact people around you. Like, that's, for me, that's like the line. And there are bad things you can do to yourself, obviously. But the biggest thing is like, just try to like mitigate hurt and try to like mitigate, you know, inconveniencing or troubling other people. Like, it's just that simple.
What do you think of the treatment of people like J.K. Rowling? Once a very loved author for the Harry Potter novels, now kind of, my God, she's in the spotlight as an enemy number one for some of these people.
Yeah, and very beloved by me, first and foremost, I'll say that. You know, I grew up on Harry Potter. It was a very important series for me growing up. I didn't have, like, the best childhood, so it was a amazing form of escapism. And it also, I think, was great for my brain development because I was reading, you know, for my age, really advanced books at really, you know, young ages. And I love her. And I think that she is absolutely right on everything to do with trans. I think that the demonization and the attacks on her have been obviously horrible for her. And I have a sort of instinctual, like, I can't believe they're messing with like this person I like feeling. But I'm also in a way very thankful for it because I think that it's shown a lot of people that like, oh, if the liberal woman who made Dumbledore gay and Hermione black retroactively thinks that there might be some issues in this area that's protected by liberals, maybe we can hear her out. And people are hearing her out. You know, it may seem like they're not because she's getting so much hate, but she's getting a lot more ears. People see the behavior towards her, and I think that it helps push people towards truth.
I mean, I was pretty disappointed by the fact that none of the cast really came out to support her when she was really under fire.
Yeah.
There was, you know, not really any sort of standing up to back up the person that essentially cemented your career and your financial success. So not a big fan.
Yeah, it was despicable.
Yeah, not a big fan of that at all. Do you agree with her? You think this is an attack on biological women's rights, just in terms of things like, you know, the space, like women's spaces, women's sports? What do you see as the fairest way to balance this out now that this is a conversation and that, you know, we have this happening? How would you personally balance this out so it's fair for people?
I think the weaponization of the trans issue is an attack on humanity in general. And I think they don't care about the fallout for women's rights, and they don't care about the fallout for kids that get caught up in surgeries that negatively impact them. So to say that they care about, you know, women's rights, I think would be giving them almost too much, right? I think it's just a consequence of what their war they're raging on people in general. You know, they know it divides people. They get us to hate our neighbors with it. And so I don't think they even think about women's rights. I really don't. I think we think about it because we see the negative impacts, you know. And so I think it's a cause and effect thing. But if you want some literal sort of like ways that I would balance it out, because that's also the piece that seems to get missed here on both sides, is like, okay, so what are the solutions, right? Exactly, yeah. So for me, I'll start with trans women in women's prisons. Don't do that. that can't happen. Whether it's post or pre-op, it cannot happen. I believe that we're in a world now, especially where the LGBT demographic is exploding globally, that prisons need to have LGBT wards. We need to segregate inmates that are in male prisons that are of an LGBT identity. That's the only thing that makes sense, is segregating these inmates. Because also, if you're on the other side politically, or you maybe care, we should all care about all of this, but if you maybe care more about the violence and the rape that trans women in women's or in men's prisons experience, right? Like, that's the position on the left, is that trans women can't be in men's prisons because A, they're women no matter what, and B, they get raped and murdered. The latter is true. And no one, you know, unfortunately, people don't care about inmates and criminals very much, which is kind of sad, because they're still humans. And if we can do a simple thing like moving them to a specific area of a prison to avoid undue rape and murder, we should do that. But, you know, it's a solution that solves the problems of both sides. Segregate the inmates, then women aren't getting raped and impregnated in women's prisons, and trans women are not getting raped and hurt in men's prisons. Simple. Trans women in women's sports, another no. There's no reason why, if there's this many trans athletes coming out, that there shouldn't be trans leagues. You know, I think that would be, again, something that helps everyone. It would obviously, you know, support the dignity of women's sports, which admittedly I don't care much about, because I don't care about sports in general, but I care about fairness. Trans leagues would be a way to organically bring in money for a community that is statistically poorer, trans people, and it keeps everything fair. Done. Especially, you know, these people that transition at 30, 40 years old, and everyone has to pretend they don't believe their eyes, that's unfair, right? Like, there's probably a more nuanced conversation for people that never go through male puberty, that are, you know, trans women that never went through that. I don't really know what that conversation would entail, but I think that you don't make policy decisions or, you know, rules based on minorities, you know, and I don't agree with children transitioning, but it happens. You know, it has to be for what makes sense for most people. So no to that. I think that transition 18 and over, full stop, done, simple decision. You can fight and die for the country. You can get whatever surgeries or treatments you want, but minors simply cannot consent. That's just a fact. And the fact that there's a segment of the population that you have to hammer in the phrase minors can't consent is pretty scary. So, minors can't consent to sex or changing their sex. What's another area where it's difficult for this integration? You know, women's spaces, like, you know, there was the incident of the Planet Fitness thing here in America. Again, the expectation to not believe your eyes and see a man shaving his beard in a space specifically where females are undressed. I mean, that could have been my mother, my grandmother, my cousin, my female friend, you know, just disgusting, really, really horrific. I think it's just the idea that every lane is for you is like difficult too. Like, I don't feel like anything's taken away from me because I don't want to go be in women's sports and like beat women. And not that I could, there's a lot of badass female women out there. I can't participate in sports. I'm not good at that, but you get what I'm saying? Like, nothing's taken away from me that I don't want to get undressed in a woman's locker room. Nothing's taken away from me that I transition as an adult. You know, so the idea that this takes something away from people, that fairness overall takes something away, we have to get rid of that because it's just not true.
Well, this is it. This is where you kind of separate the legit people, who I would say you 100% legit, and the ones who are essentially just role playing and getting attention and being narcissists. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm sorry, but like for me personally, I would say that you can't, you know, speaking as a man, I haven't gone through girlhood teenagehood. I haven't gone through the trials and tribulations of the, you know, the biological, the psychological, all the different things that happen to a female, just like a female hasn't gone through the same things as me, going from a boy to a man. So I don't feel like you can't skip ahead. You can't just skip ahead at the end of it and go, oh yeah, if I just put these things on and act in a certain way, I'm a woman. That's downgrading a woman to just like a cosplay, to a pantomime, a theater. And I think that's really disrespectful to women in general.
It is, you know, and for me, the way I see it is, this may seem a little silly, but I look at a country that does it right, and it's Thailand. And people talk about the ladyboy culture in Thailand and whatever. Notice how there's a different word that they use over there. And it's not a word that anyone disagrees with. Like, the ladyboys there, you know, my instinct even says, wants to say trans, but they call themselves that. And it is trans. They do the same things I've done, you know, surgery, hormones, whatever. And they don't believe that that makes them biological women. In fact, they very openly talk about how they consider themselves more of a third category in society. And that's exactly what trans people are. It's a third category. I'm not saying it's a third gender. I am not saying it's an invented sex. But in terms of how it should be handled socially, I believe it should be handled as a third category because it is. And I think that any handling of that involves taking something away from women is just not cool. And what you mentioned about, like, you can't have gone through girlhood and being born a girl and going through all that and, you know, menstruation and pregnancy and just the things that socially girls and women go through. That's 100% true. And for me, whenever I see the blatant, like, disrespect of women, it doesn't match my sort of feelings towards it as someone who has transitioned and is perceived in the world as a woman when I walk down the street. And, you know, everyone in my life treats me as a woman because that's how they see me. But in no way does my experience parallel biological women. I didn't go through girlhood. I've never had a period. I will never get pregnant. You know, I have had experiences that no one like you could necessarily experience because you're not going to be treated as a woman. And so that actually gives me empathy for women. When I'm living my life and I experience something negative because the world perceives me as a woman, that heightens my empathy. It doesn't lessen it. And so when I see the opposite, how there's trans people now that have this lack of empathy, I'm like, that's how I know you're, and you can see it, they don't actually transition. But for me, transitioning gave me more empathy for women because I see how I'm treated sometimes as, you know, in the eyes of the world, a woman. And I'm like, oh, wow. There's like really some downsides to it, as there is for men. You know, everything is a balance. But I think that because I've transitioned, I have sort of a nuanced perspective on it because I've now experienced a little bit of both. But the people who are screaming trans women are women and expect that to be the end of the discussion, it's like, that's not even how trans is treated across the world, even by trans people. You know, like I said, it's like, I've watched so many interviews with people in the ladyboy culture, and it's like, they will like laugh if you like insist that they are biological women or that they are women totally. Like, no, I'm a ladyboy. Like, it's different. And I don't like that phrase for me. I'm not going to call myself that. It seems a little whatever. But I am a trans woman, and I consider that to be basically that.
Yeah, well, again, like I said, it comes back to authenticity and just jumping on a bandwagon because you want to be noticed. And I think that's what we have a real issue with here, and a bit of a mental health issue. You know, we're pandering to them instead of actually trying to help them. And I've seen a lot of examples, like you were just saying, and I've seen a lot of them on your YouTube channel when you're going out to these places and just asking questions, just asking basic normal questions, and people discover who you are and they go absolutely crazy and, you know, screaming and being violent and throwing temper tantrums. These are not fully formed adults. These are people with behavioral issues that are being elevated and pandered to, and it's causing people who should be seeking some help to become, you know, elevated and respected voices in a community. Now, I can understand the desire to belong, especially if you're socially awkward, you've been picked on in school, you're not top of the food chain in the male dominance hierarchy. Suddenly there's a group that will accept you. You know, all you have to do is identify as a woman. You don't need to have any surgery or change your appearance. You can just claim it and instantly you're respected, you're loved. So yeah, I mean, of course, that would happen. Speaking as a man who knows what men are like, low status males who can't compete in that male environment will retreat towards this kind of community. And these are not legitimate of gender dysmorphia. These are guys with a real chip on their shoulder against society. They're very angry. They struggle to control their emotions. They're not really desired by men or women in the wider dating pool, and we're elevating these people to hero status for essentially role-playing as women.
Oh, that part. And before I forget, I wanted to mention one thing you mentioned, you know, and how there's no expectation for them to actually transition. Even that is new. Like, that is new. Like, when I came to terms basically within myself that, like, okay, this thing called a transsexual, this diagnosis of gender dysphoria, it's like, okay, this is a thing for my life. So what now? Transition. You know, I mean, obviously I considered if I could get by not doing that to me, that wasn't an option. And at that time, that was like what a trans person was. Keyword trans, like a transition. And now, you know, this might be getting a little bit in the weeds for people, because some people, not everyone's at the same place of knowledge on all this, but there are different types of trans people, and they are separated by something very specific. Have you ever heard of AGPs versus HSTS, like the two categories?
No.
Okay. So this can sound a bit complicated, but it's probably going to provide a lot of clarity, hopefully, to you and anyone listening to this. AGPs, that's short for autogynephilia. That is, think crossdresser. Think man who has a sexual fetish at seeing himself dressed in a wig and a dress, whatever. Think man who sneaks into his wife's clothing, who wants to secretly be his wife for a sexual fetish. And AGPs are always attracted to women. So these are these men, like you said, low status males, who even you can see how they, you know, when they treat women, it's clearly like male aggression, very specifically. So that's one side of the coin. AGPs, autogynephilia, is attracted to women. Then there's HSTS. Think ladyboy. Think biological male who had gender dysphoria at a very young age, is attracted to men and wants to live a as normal as possible, obviously, heteronormative life where they are the woman with a man. Obviously, we have our opinions if that's like scientifically possible. I don't believe so, but socially, right? That's what they want. And if you look, when you see all these instances of crazy stuff in bathrooms and crazy, you know, protests and riots, and I've seen it up close and personal when I go to Pride, the people that are aggressing on me, these are always men attracted to women. And I think that that is a defining separation between the people that are peaceful in the trans community and that are not. Not to say, I guess, that every trans person attracted to women is violent or aggressive or whatever, but it is an overwhelming reality from what I have seen, simply because the word transsexual and trans has been spread out so much that now crossdressers claim trans, and you see men in wigs and their wives' clothing saying, I'm trans. That's not something even the trans community tolerated until very recently, when it's been overran now by politics. I remember being in like online groups for trans women when I first started transitioning, and these were like support groups, and it was different from like the Reddit pages you see now and Discord pages. It was like transsexuals who transitioned and who lived their lives by blending in society, and all the posts would be making fun of crossdressers. And these people you now see on loads of TikTok, that's the only thing our community even used to talk about, was like, look at these disgusting men. And now politics has made it so that you can claim trans even if it's just a fetish, which it was never a fetish. It's not even in the medical records and how it's been diagnosed as anything to do with your sexuality. It has nothing to do with like my sexuality. But for these people, it is. So that's a defining kind of split.
Yeah, and it is scary when you're seeing, you know, I'm sorry, men in dresses with beards yelling at women who are trying to talk about, you know, women's rights at a protest or an event, and they're always the most aggressive, and you know, you can see that male aggression and that energy, and it kind of seems to have some overlaps with the whole kind of, you know, men going their own way movements, or the whole incel communities, that side of it, where you've just got these very angry young men, and they find a place to belong. And I think that's a really, really worrying component of this, because you get, you get school shootings and things like that that have already occurred. That's a weird one. I mean, I don't want to, it's probably a little touchy, but did they ever release the manifesto of that shooter?
I don't believe they did.
No.
And that, it's so interesting how, you know, obviously we're in this unfortunate state of the world where like shootings and like mass shootings and like public shootings are just part of the fabric of life, at least here, you know.
Luckily not here, but we've also had all of our guns taken away from us, where there's a pro-con balance to be said there as well.
Yeah, and I'm strongly pro-2A. My audience knows that. You know, I have like close to 30 guns now at this point. It's a hobby as well for me. But you know, it's weird how there's some shootings that we're just not allowed to like really touch, right? Like right now, the establishment seems to be letting people talk about the Trump one because it's just such a big deal. But and they kind of there's no way they can even feasibly stop people from talking about it. But certain ones, things aren't released, you know, it's not something that you can talk about. Your video will get shadow banned, your tweet will get shadow banned. And that's really, really scary. And I think particularly with that one, with the trans shooter, it's probably due to the fact that they know that that shooting is directly caused by their rhetoric and the politicization of this trans issue. It's also really crazy because, you know, when you look at that shooter, it's like, she falls into the other side of the coin of what we're talking about here. It was a biological woman who, where was the transition? Like it was like just a woman, right? I would never even call it that person a trans man. They claimed that because anyone can claim anything. So it's because of them broadening what trans means that even a woman who's never transitioned can even constitute as trans. So that's their doing number one. And number two, the hate in that human's heart was so clearly, you know, inspired by this rhetoric. And it makes them look bad, basically. It makes the establishment look bad that that shooting in particular happened because a invention of their politics, a construct of their politics went out. And my thought is like, why was that never labeled a hate crime? I mean, from what I've seen, when any other, you know, minority of people or demographic of people is targeted specifically because they're that demographic, that's a hate crime. I mean, when Pulse nightclub got shot up in 2016 was a horrific tragedy, and everyone, including President Trump and everyone across the aisle, said that was a hate crime. Someone went in with a gun and said, because these are gay people, I am going to shoot. So when someone goes into a Christian school and says, because these are Christians, I'm going to shoot, where's the hate crime label?
You know, we should all just agree that hateful people exist in every single demographic. There are assholes in every single demographic. And to be honest, most people are actually pretty cool. And, you know, I've got lesbian friends, gay friends, trans friends. Like, I've got no bone to pick with people that express themselves in these ways. But I definitely have an issue with really hate-filled, radicalized activists that aren't questioning the programming that they've just literally just like eaten up with a spoon. And now they're little foot soldiers for the establishment. It's such a weird turn. Again, like we were saying, this kind of like flip of the political axis where you've got the liberal left suddenly basically acting as attack dogs for the institution. Like, how the hell does that happen?
They've turned everyday citizens and people who you can tell in their normal minds and in their spirits, they're not warriors, they're not Al-Qaeda, they're not, you know, they've turned everyday people into people who suddenly are so desensitized to violence and hatred that they engage in it. And that's really scary because that just goes back to the social engineering thing. And there's also another conversation of like, I've seen some people say, stop blaming the Trump shooter on the rhetoric because it is his responsibility and only one person pulled the trigger. And that's 100% true. And that response, that blame is on one human being. However, I'm not going to pretend like it doesn't exist in a vacuum or that it exists in a vacuum. I'm not going to pretend like it exists in, you know, some alternate universe where people are not being social engineered. And if you want to go back to people's intelligence, I mean, how much solace does it really give you to say, well, no, it's the responsibility of the person who did it. Like, that's the blame. It's like, what does that do for us as a society? That's not going to stop more of these people from being engineered. You know, some people are literally not intelligent enough to resist it or fall into it. So it still is in large part the temperature and the media and the government to blame, you know, and the person, of course. But one thing that really disturbed me, I thought about it and like, okay, so the shooter was 20.
Yeah.
That means that he was like 12 when the Trump stuff, and by the Trump stuff, I mean the temperature that the media decided to turn to 11, 12, 13 out of 10.
All his formative years, just
all of them. He became a man in that time and sprinkled in 2 years of draconian anti-human lockdowns and a pandemic and everything, and everyone's mental health spiraled. So I don't know how much solace it gives me to say that that's a crazy person and the blame is only on them. It's like, everything about that seems socially engineered to me. Like, whether or not that person was put up to it by a force within government or entity, that's another conversation. It's scarier if he wasn't, because that means that's just what they've done to people.
Yeah, yeah, because then it's just that, then it's just a signature of the cultural norm, and that would be a really disturbing thing. Like you said, there are some really significant red flags, including just like the actual securing of the venue. So I would say it probably goes a little bit deeper than just one single person acting on their own motives. Not to get too conspiratorial, because we don't know, but it, you know, I think there's going to be a pretty significant investigation into how that was actually done. Well, that's what again this is what I think is interesting about this time we're living in, like talking about how they can't hold on to narratives. People online are already developing 3D models of the entire environment, going through it, getting veterans on, you know, to do an interview on a podcast. Tell me what you would have done as an elite tier one sniper. Oh, well, I would have definitely not done this, 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 and this. So it's like they can't keep it contained like they did with other things, because people are already debunking, investigating. And, you know, this is, again, this is just going to happen with more and more things, including the purposeful radicalization of the LGBT community.
And also, there's something really scary to be said about the fact that I don't think they even care to make it super believable. I don't think they have to.
No.
Like, that's one of the things that, like, you know, about, you know, my side, because I do have a partisan view on the world in some ways, right? And people on my side, one of the things I think they fall into is like, oh no, this is a disinformation campaign. They're trying to throw us off. And I'm like, I think the truth is even scarier. They don't actually care about throwing you off. They don't care if you know what they're doing. They don't care if you know that they set something up. I don't think they care that much, because you don't have any power. And all they have to do is say, no, anyone who says this, ban them off social media, and you know, they lose their jobs and we stick the IRS on them or whatever we're doing, right? It's like, I don't think they care enough about what you think about a situation to even feed you disinformation. So they'll make it so obvious just right there because they don't care.
You are only free so long as you're not disruptive. So you can talk about this stuff. You know, you can sit there. You can go on online, and okay, so yeah, on YouTube and things are censorship. But for the most part, you're still pretty much free to critique the government, so long as you don't matter. So long as you haven't got a million followers, two million followers, 3 million followers. Once you become a Joe Rogan or a Russell Brand or a Jimmy Dore, suddenly you get put in the spotlight, right wing propagandist, conspiracy theorist, yada yada yada. And you know, this is the thing: is you can speak, you do have freedom of speech, just as long as your freedom of speech doesn't really make a difference.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that I've been able to feel, you know, the further I delve into doing what I do. You know, I at one time started with zero people listening to me, and now I have, across both channels, about 2 million, you know, subscribers. And I have felt it, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, Google alert, horrible article about me, you know, writing about me in just the most horrific, like exaggerative ways, you know, it's like, and then all of a sudden, oh, wait, 7 more Google alerts, 8 more websites just copy pasted the same thing. It's like an AI feed of like, this is the person we slander. And it's like, yeah, because if you have influence, you are a threat, you know, and that's scary, because I feel like I don't, you know, say anything that is harmful to anyone except like demons and pedophiles. So I guess that kind of indicates that like we're against demons and pedophiles.
Well, listen, Blair, this has been such a, you know, it's an eye-opening, it's a disturbing conversation. We've gone down some pretty interesting rabbit holes. I'm glad I got you to
talk about UFO. We even sprinkled some UFO Antarctica stuff in there.
Although we're a multifaceted, dynamic conversation. Really enjoyed it. Wishing you, honestly, the very best with everything that you're doing. Think you're fantastic. All your support. And I'll link you up with some friends of mine to talk about your family.
Yes.
You never know what might be hiding down in that bloodline.
Yeah, for real. Thank you so much for having me. Love your channel. Can't wait to watch even more of it. And yeah, hope we talk soon.